But it's a tricky one because we want both things at once. We definitely want to protect a certain form of government and a certain form of a certain set of economics, and we're not really honest, and we're giving them mixed messages all the time. We're saying don't do bad things, but nevertheless don't let us down. And it's very unfair to give them the mixed message. The mixed messages come out from the fact that we are a mixed message as human beings in this culture. We are not straight ourselves as to what red and dead and kill or be killed. And they're just the product of our mixed motivation, that we want our superiority and specialness, and we want our protection of our plot, and yet at the same moment, we want to look good in our own eyes. We want to be moral people. We don't want to hurt other human beings. And it isn't clear that human beings want more to be moral than they want to be, in this case, not alive, because they're going to kill them, they're the front line. But in general, what they're empowered to do is to preserve, finally, more Americans than Russians. So the American culture survives and Russian culture doesn't survive. All right. So that's where the identity comes, finally, because they're not going to save themselves, as you're pointing out.
Actually, to be, again, fair, and why not, I don't believe that any of them that I knew, and very many of them at all, have want in any sense to see a nuclear war, certainly a big nuclear war. There certainly have always been people who felt that the demonstration effect of a small nuclear war would be very good politically, and I believe our administration has such people
at
high levels.
It clearly has them.
But I don't think even this administration, which is far out on this scale,
sees a big war as
a
desirable
war.
To anybody.
And there's statements that we could live through it and so forth.
And that's what everybody's counting on.
Yeah, but the trouble is...
So you got to feed that into the computer too. It's not, don't pass it off so lightly, because in all of the kind of ominous quality of the way you present material, of it getting out of hand, keep in mind those human qualities, that nobody really does want that.
Well, I'll tell you what the Livermore guy said to me the other day. He said, of course, what I worry about is accident.
Yeah.
As well he might. You know,
sure,
he knows the numbers
well
of weapons, and he knows the weapons. He says, what he's proud of doing at Livermore, this is very actually funny in a way, he said, you know, I'll tell you why we've got to keep testing and got to keep designing. He said, we could, if given the order, it would take a while, but we're on the verge of being able to design a weapon that a terrorist couldn't use if he captured it, because if he fiddled with it, it would
go off.
No, it wouldn't go off. That wouldn't be good. But it would have a kind of a meltdown within the mechanism. It would become inoperable and permanently inoperable.
Yeah.
So if you fooled around with it in an unauthorized way, trying to make it work or trying to use it, it would simply become
it's
a dud.
Just a spy game.
Very good.
Yeah.
Oddly, it's funny. He said this with very great enthusiasm, telling why it was so good that he was doing what he was doing and why Livermore must go on working. I mean, I just got arrested a week earlier saying Livermore should not go on doing. We feel quite strongly about this. It was an odd example that he used because I said, you know, I've been at Livermore once before with Sam Cohen, the, quote, father of the neutron bomb, who has worked with Livermore people. Right now. I had the clearances. I had the badge. We could go anywhere. I talked to Johnny Foster. He became the head later at DD Army, on that proposal. But that was 1961. He told me they were ready to do it right then.
Mm,
are you telling me that 20 years later you've never done it?
Yeah.
But actually, he said yes. Yes, it worked. They hadn't done it. Mm. The point being, though, he was so proud that they were making the weapons safer, which is something of an admission, if it needs admitting, that they're not safe. They need making safer. He thinks this is terribly important to keep doing. He's worried about the accident. My information that I wanted to bring to him was, in addition to all the risks of accident, which are obvious by keeping this going, unauthorized action, theft, and this sort of thing, too, there is the danger, which most people in the system don't know, and he didn't know, of deliberate initiation of this war by not just people like Russians, whatever that means, and not just people like Idi Amin, but indeed by people like everyone we have elected to be president since the bomb was developed. Mm-hmm. Every one of them has seriously contemplated the imminent use of nuclear weapons first in an ongoing crisis.
Yeah.
Little known fact, which I didn't know at the time, but it is knowable now, yeah. And I think people need to know it. It's part of what I'm putting.
But you see,
defines our
danger. I hear all that, but you can still go back one level back and say, well, look at the human condition. They're willing to use anything they can as a threat, but they don't want to die, and they don't want to kill everybody. But they're going to arm to the teeth. To protect each other, and they're going to hold on to their ideologies and their egos at any expense, except short of actually doing it.
Except
so it will only be error. It will only be error.
No, that would be true. They don't imagine. They can't conceive of themselves, and they would be highly unlikely that in a sort of unstressful situation, no war going on.
Yeah,
they would just decide
they
would push the button to disarm the other.
But under stress, yeah. It's a whole different ballgame.
Under stress, not only might they do it, but they plan to do it. And
yes.
To make the threat
and
more credible.
And it's set up so mechanically that they would have to do it.
To make the threat more credible, they take all kinds of actions in the way of deployment and training and alerting procedures and everything, which quite openly make it more likely that you would carry out that threat.
Mm-hmm.
They have by no means prepared to maximize the chance that they could back out at the moment. Quite the contrary. They have made every preparation to increase the likelihood, still no doubt short of certainty. You can't make it certain that they won't find a way to defuse the thing at the last moment, you say, in fear. But they've gone everything to reduce that probability. And so these are men who don't want to launch nuclear weapons, but they do feel that the threat is necessary and legitimate, and that they must take actions that make the launching more likely. And that is our situation.
And how do you change that? And the question is, do you change that by dealing directly with those people? Or do you deal with that by moral coercion on them, assuming that they don't want to listen because they are so programmed in? Are they us or are they them? Can we treat them as us or can we treat them as them? Are they having any kind of motives that we don't have? Or do they have them in a special abundance? Or are they interested by us to do the part of us that we don't want to do? I mean, who are these people in the sense of a human kind? Like, I think it's great that you open these dialogues. Like you said, you're going to meet with the Assistant Secretary of Defense, and you're meeting with... I think those dialogues are great, and I'm sure the church is going to have more dialogues. And I mean, it seems to me that information and bringing the whole thing out into the open in the kind of forum is one of the vehicles for public of a representative democracy. I mean, at some level, this is still a representative democracy.
Yeah.
And Congress, although there's an inertial, tremendous inertial quality in it, it does still work that way.
What's your answer as to how to do this? You were asking the question. I don't mean your answer, but I mean, how do you bear on this? Who do you deal with? And how would you approach it?
I keep looking and reaching for those metaphors or those ways of saying it that doesn't make anybody them, that treats the human condition in such a way that everybody can hear it and feel it in a level such that it in some way slightly moves them in a direction. For the person on the street, it might move them to join a protest. For the person in the Pentagon, it might move them to slightly reconsider the solidity of their position. Just something that starts to move, just breaks the ice flow. It starts to move the whole process. As Jerry Brown says, the ship of state turns slowly. I don't think he made it up, but that's the line. Yeah. And you can feel that at every level. But the question is, where do you get into the human condition? Because you don't do it, I don't think, with fear. I think that's milked for as hard as it can. I'm not even sure you do it with reason, which is really your strategy of information, facts, and reason.
Part of my strategy. I mean, it was not accidental, for instance, that I was speaking to the same man having been arrested.
Yeah, I understand, of course. I understand. I take that back.
One hears
an arrest is hardly rational.
Well,
it isn't. And I guess you do it by your arrest by example. It feels to me like in the Second World War, I don't know whether you remember, since you and I lived through that period at a certain age, I remember qualities of moral and human dignity among the people of America, and sharing and collaboration. And I mean, I was an air raid spotter, and my father was a warden, and my mother knitted for Britain, and I mean, we were all really into it. My brothers were both in the service, and it was like the whole family was loaded. Yeah. And there was a tremendous camaraderie, esprit de corps. There was the good guys and the bad guys, and we were the good guys fighting the bad guys, and it was all very simple. But it brought out, it's like why I went down to Market Street when the 49ers won, to feel whether or not in the victory of the Roman Empire type victory, of the victory of the games, there would be those qualities of coming together in a certain kind of love or a certain kind of flow occurring between people that would allow new kinds of dialogue to take place.